The following sermon audio is from Missio Dei Church, Cincinnati. More information about Missio Dei Church and our pursuit to be a gospel-centered, city-focused church community can be found at www.mdcincy.org.
Okay. Last week, we made the point in coming to the fourth commandment that we need to be a people who take a break. And if we're not a people who take a break, then we can just expect to become broken people, all right? And so we're slowing way down. You guys gave me 12 weeks off this summer. And so one of the things that I learned is that we as a people, we've got to hit pause. We've got to stop. And so I'm not going to truck through the things that I've learned in 1 week. I'm gonna pace myself. We're going to take our time. We've got to get a sense of Sabbath rest. And so we're going to take our time with it. We're going through 7 weeks on the fourth commandment before we truck on and get into the rest of the Ten Commandments. And so I'm in the fourth commandment this morning. Last week, what we looked at is that we wanted everybody to stop, right? That was the whole point. Just stop. Embrace the routines, embrace the responsibilities, embrace the rejoicing of Sabbath rest. We want to invite you into that. And then what we learned was that while in the Old Testament, there were certain ceremonial expectations, a seventh day of the week where everybody was supposed to stop what they were doing as a nation and visibly together take the day off. And that was supposed to mark them as something unique. But that was very ceremonial. We get into the New Testament and into the people of God that are not just one nation, but people of all nations. And that changes, ceremonial, right? The ceremony changes for those of us who are in Christ. The ceremony was supposed to point to Jesus, that he would give us rest. The ceremony was supposed to point to the eternal kingdom, that there's coming the rest of God for his people. But now that Jesus has fulfilled that, the ceremony isn't, we're not obliged to keep the ceremony. Now we are obliged to keep the principle, but the practice looks different. We have freedom in the practice. And so people have done all kinds of things, right? They've tried to switch it. Well, the Christian Sabbath is now on Sunday or the Lord's Day. The problem with that is that's not what the Bible teaches, right? The Bible teaches they're still honoring the Sabbath if they had a Jewish background on the seventh day. Then the first day of the week before they went to work, after they went to work, they're gathering. And then they're gathering on a daily basis. Now, there became a custom of gathering on the Lord's Day, but you cannot say that one replaces the other. That's not the way it works. Freedom replaced the ceremony. And so we're free in how we observe the Sabbath, but there's still a moral obligation to do it. So it will look differently. So what does it look like? That's what we're trying to explore. And that's why we're taking some time to explore it. What does it look like to observe the Sabbath? To get a picture of that, here's where we're going. Let's look at Exodus chapter 20. Same text that we've been reading, and we'll continue to read. It'll be kind of our primary text for the next several weeks. It's got its place in the Ten Commandments, and we'll be in verse 8. The Bible says this, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work. You or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant or your livestock or the sojourner who is with you in your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and all that is in them and rested the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the seventh day and made it holy." This is the word of the Lord. Okay. Here are some observations that I see kind of jumping out of the text at me when I think of what does it look like to observe the Sabbath? What does it look like morally? What obligations do I have? There's freedom in the practice, but the principle is there. And here's what I'm seeing. There's a couple words here. Number one, the word remember, right? The word remember. Right away, God is trying to capture the attention of our minds. right? He's saying, think about something. There's a thought process. There's a mindfulness when it comes to Sabbath. So part of what it means to observe the Sabbath is that we engage our minds in rest. The second thing I see there is this idea of holiness, keeping it holy, keeping it set apart, keeping it consecrated, right? And so there's a pattern of setting apart time to be mindful of rest. And then you jump down toward the end of our text for this morning, and it basically gives us God's pattern. How did he do this? Well, 6 days he worked. On the seventh day, he rested. And what does he do in resting? He blesses the Sabbath day, right? There's rejoicing in it. It's not a miserable day where you're stuck going to church with a bunch of people that seem like hypocrites that you don't want to be around, right? There's a rejoicing in the rest day. And there's still that holiness. There's that setting apart, a sacred time, a consecration. And so here's what we see. I want to summarize this really quickly, and then I want to move on and really try to make it pop and be applicable. One of the blessings of the Sabbath is setting apart, right? A consecration of our time to remember, to be mindful, to observe, to reflect, to consider. I'll give you a phrase that I'd like for you to maybe have to hang the rest of the ideas on while we're walking through this. And it's a phrase that I'll keep repeating. What God is saying in Sabbath is that he wants us to pay attention, right? We're supposed to consecrate time to pay attention, to be observant, to consider, right? To reflect, to remember. We're supposed to have that opportunity. Sabbath is time set apart over which other time should not have a claim over. So when you're at work, you need to be mindful of your job. No? Yes. Yes, you need to be mindful of your work. Last week we looked at the story of the Ford Motor Company, and they discovered the 40-hour work week. Well, how did they discover that? They determined that they could get out of workers about 40 hours worth of work per week before they weren't mindful anymore, and they started making mistakes that could cost them their lives or the company money. That's where we get our 40-hour work week. And so if you're not mindful while you're working, you're going to miss out on being a productive worker. But scripture points to this time where he says, no, there also needs to be consecrated time where you're mindful, not just of your job, but other things. And if you're not mindful of those things, you're going to miss out on human experience. And one of those human experiences you're going to miss out on is, what does it mean to be the people of God? And so God gives us this gift, and he says, I want you to take a break, consecrate some time to pay attention. Sabbath is a gift of stopping to pay attention, stopping to be mindful. Now, we all have stories where we can confess times where we've missed out on something because we weren't paying attention. I've got something that happens to me, like, recurrently. It just keeps happening over and over. If you're in a car with me, you're in a dangerous place. I'm just not a great driver. I don't do a great job of paying attention. In fact, let's roll back the clock a few years. I'm living in Asheville, North Carolina. There's a guy who's starting to attend our core group. We're trying to get a church started in Asheville. I meet this guy, wants to be involved in leadership, and we're still trying to get to know one another, and we decide, hey, let's go to this conference in Orlando, Florida. We'll take time, we'll get to know one another, we'll get trained together, it'll be great. And so we're going to go down, and I'm driving, and we're getting to know one another, we're telling stories, we're laughing, driving along, and all of a sudden I see off in the distance this structure that I hadn't seen before. We're rolling into Charleston, South Carolina, and I'm seeing the Cooper River Bridge. Now, I had been to Charleston many times. I hadn't been there at this point for probably about a year and a half. And so the bridge, the last time I was there, wasn't finished. And it was a strange sight to me because I was very familiar with Charleston. We went there very often as a family when we lived in South Carolina. And so I'm seeing this, and then I'm going on about how, oh, that bridge looks so cool. It looks so great. Look at the way it rises up. And then as I'm describing the excitement of seeing the Cooper River Bridge, I stopped for a moment and I thought, wait a second, what on earth are we doing in Charleston, South Carolina? I was supposed to turn right about an hour and a half ago at Columbia, South Carolina, and start heading south, and I missed it because I was distracted. I wasn't paying attention, right? This happens to me often. That's not the only time it happened. another time I was in Raleigh, North Carolina at a conference with a bunch of guys, and I'm heading back to Asheville, and all of a sudden I'm pulling in, I'm seeing the city lights for Charlotte. And Charlotte's about 45 minutes out of my way. I don't even know how I landed there because I had to actually turn to head toward Charlotte. And so somehow in my distraction, I turned and I didn't realize it for 45 minutes. It took me 2 hours out of my way. So 45 minute distraction cost me 2 hours of my life. Not done. Every year we do an elder retreat, and we go down to Red River Gorge. We rent a cabin. We get to get our families together. We usually try to do too much work. This year we're not going to do as much work. We're going to do a lot more praying and playing because our families are there, and so we don't need to busy up our days with staff meeting like I like to do because I don't know how to stop and pay attention. But anyway, one year, about 2 years ago, we happened to land our retreat. It was going to end on Mother's Day. And so we're spending the night, and we wake up the next morning. We've got a rush to get out of there. We've got a long drive so that I can honor my wife, who is a mother of four children. I can honor my mom. I can honor her mom. We're going to have a lunch together back in Cincinnati. And so we're rushing to get home, and we're driving along, and all of a sudden, I notice a sign. It's the we're coming from Red River Gorge, heading to Cincinnati, okay? You go up to Lexington, you head north. All of a sudden, I look, and there's the sign, Woodford Reserve Distillery, which is out toward Louisville, right? Out of my way once again. And so, it cost me not just time, but it cost me a moment to honor, because like we were so late for lunch, right? Because I was distracted. I wasn't paying attention. And so all of us probably have these stories, right, where we weren't paying attention to something important, and it cost us something. For some of us, we don't know how to shut work off, and it costs us relationships, doesn't it? Right? It costs something when we don't pay attention. And God is inviting us in, and he's saying, no, I want you to slow down. I want you to consecrate some time to pay attention. We all, to some measure, refuse to consecrate time. Now, some of us, here's the way we do it. Because you're starting to think of stories, let me help you along with that. Let's make this really personal. Some of us refuse to consecrate time because we have a poor work ethic. And here's what I'm not just talking about. I'm not just talking about the failure of many of us to do good work, right? That might be the case. However, in our community, that tends to not be the case, right? We're not a community of people that don't get things done. We are a community that actually does get things done. And so I don't want to harp too much. Some of you in the room, yeah, you need to work hard. Some of us have a poor work ethic on the other extreme. We don't know how to stop working, right? I am one of these people. In fact, today I sinned with this. I woke up very early. I woke up at about 5 a.m., and here's what was on my mind. I've been working on a project in my basement. We have historically had, when it rains really heavily, a little stream of water that seeps in from the corner. And I've learned all about what that is. There's water on the other side of my walls. I need to be able to relieve that pressure and reroute it so it runs to the drains and doesn't run across my floors. And so I've been working on that project. I've been drilling weep holes into my basement floor and letting the water flow through. So now we've had like a steady stream of water coming in. The problem with that is you can't work with things. Like glue doesn't dry when there's water running through it, right? And so I had a moment. I know it's going to rain this afternoon, and I knew I have to get this sealed and dry. So I was up at 5, and I'm cranking away, and I'm trying to get this done. I glued it up yesterday, that dried. I put the silicone sealant on today so that it would be ready to go. But here's what it cost me. I'm supposed to be here in the mornings on Sunday by about 8:30 at the latest, 8:45 if I'm running a few minutes late. I walked in the building at about 10 after 8. Actually, that's a lie. I think I may have pulled into the parking lot about 10 minutes to 8, not 10 minutes to 9. Sorry, I'm distracted. This is what happens when you're overworked, when you're poor, you have a poor work ethic and you think you can do more than you actually can, right? And many of us, that's us. We're always running late, aren't we? We're always trying to cram one more thing in and nothing gets done in a quality way. Are you always arriving late? Are you often forgetting things? Are you often forgetting important things? Are you thinking about things you have to do while you're doing other things? then chances are you're cramming too much into your calendar and you have a poor work ethic. Now, let me let you off the hook just for a moment. Sometimes it's just a season, right? And it's okay. Like, I don't want you to avoid things. Sometimes you're going to go through a busy season where you're just busy. I get that. For me, it's a busy heart. For me, it's been 14 years at least of my married life where I'm trying to cram too many things in to my schedule and to my calendar. And so even this summer when I had 12 weeks to not work, I'm working. And that's a sin issue. That's a heart issue. God is saying stop and pay attention. And so we want to dig down. That's why I want to slow down with this Sabbath thing, because I think this is where a lot of us are, aren't we? And we're not sure what to do with it. And rather than stop and deal with it, we just move on and we stay busy and we keep going. So some of us, we just have a poor work ethic. Some of us, however, will set apart time, but it's not godly reflective time, right? And you don't have to be religious to do this, right? Some of us, the way we do this very naturally. What ends up happening is many of us, we're looking for relief from what it feels like to do regular life. Regular life feels kind of boring. It feels kind of mundane. And so when it comes to the weekend, when it comes to my time away, I'm not paying attention to the way God has designed me, and I'm not giving much thought to the Lord, even though it's supposed to be a Sabbath to the Lord. Instead, what I'm doing is I'm filling up my time with things that I think will give me pleasure. But here's the problem. What we end up doing is we spend our time filling up our schedules with temporal things that don't last. And that creates in us a very insatiable appetite, because how long do temporal things last? Temporarily. They're not eternal. And so when we fill up our schedule, when we fill up our time, when our hearts are craving something eternal and we fill it with something temporal, it leaves us not only unsatisfied, but we have a greater sense of unrest. And our thirst for whatever's out there, it becomes greater. And then so then we start chasing these other things, and then we develop a poor work ethic. And so we're right back at square one. When we fill our time with selfish pleasure, and we would rather do things that we think are going to satisfy that don't, we end up with a greater sense of unrest, don't we? I've been eating healthy lately. And so I'm learning this lesson not just with my schedule, but also with my food, right? I thought I ate pretty healthy. As I track what I eat, I realized, yeah, I'm not eating so healthy after all. Now, I thought that if I'm eating healthy, my kids are eating healthy, but it's caused me to stop and evaluate now what my kids are eating. And for whatever reason, my kids love things that are very unsatisfying and they're strange. How many of you, like my kids, love marshmallows, right? I mean, that is just a total waste of time, is it not? There's nothing to a marshmallow. They don't taste good, right? There's nothing. They don't satisfy you. My kids love marshmallows. So whenever we're in the backyard and we're doing a marshmallow roast, like they're roasting one and eating another, and they just can't get enough of them. And I'm like, but that's the way we fill our time up, isn't it? We're just eating marshmallows. We're hungry for something, and we fill it up with something that won't satisfy. And we're filling up our time with temporal things that last temporarily, and then we're left with a greater sense of unrest. Right? So then there's some of us that we're like, okay, I'm not going to just have a poor work ethic. I'm going to work this out. I'm going to do it right. I'm going to spend some time in church with God's people, because that's what he says I should do. But our hearts are still a little bit bent and a little bit broken, and a little bit busted up. And so what we do is we attend church, we take a Sabbath, but we do it superstitiously. And here's what I mean by that. We come to God and we say, all right, Lord, things aren't working out. I don't feel a sense of satisfaction. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to come. I'm going to participate in some religious exercises. I'm going to sing songs. I'm going to listen to sermons. I'm going to partake of communion. I'm going to get involved in community. But then I expect you to change my circumstances. I've shown up. I've done my part. Now it's your part. And so what we do is we participate. We sort of Sabbath to get God to owe us something. And it's superstition. It's, I will do this, and then God will do this. And if I do this, then God will do this, and he'll owe me. And all that amounts to is step on a crack and break your mother's back, right? And that never works, and so why do you think this will? Why do you think your superstitious approach, where you're really just trying to get what you want instead of take time to commune with God, why do you think that's going to work out? What ends up happening is as we approach God superstitiously, we've realized that in the game there's not enough rules. And so we look at his list of rules and we think, I think I need to add to that. There's got to be a few more things because it doesn't, when we abide by rules, there doesn't seem to be enough rules to make sense of the situation I'm facing. And so when we have this overabundance on the rules, and if I'm doing these things, then I'm keeping score with God. I know what he owes me. I know what I owe him. Things will work out. But here's the problem with that, and here's why it leaves us so empty, because there's no intimacy. Can you imagine any relationship that's quality when all it is about tasks that are exchanged? Can you imagine if my wife said to me, Kurt, I really miss you. I'd like to spend some time with you. I'd like to hear what's on your heart. I want to be able to pray for you. And I'm a little bit like, whoa, what gives? I show up on time when you ask me to be there, and I'm there. I take the kids for you when you want to get out of the house. I'm doing my sort of husbandly responsibilities of, in our home, like I tend to fix things, and I tend to be the one that's out mowing the lawn, even though I don't have to do that anymore because I have two able-bodied young boys, and they get to do that now, but I'm making sure it gets done. Like, I'm doing all the tasks. What do you mean you want to sit down and hear my, is that going to be a good, lasting relationship? It's going to be terrible, and it's unfulfilling, and it leaves us unsatisfied, but we do the same thing in our relationship to God. I'll fill out these tasks, and then you owe me, but then there's no exchange of intimacy, and God is saying, no, I want to change your hearts. I want to have intimacy with you. I want to share with you how I feel about you. But if you won't stop and pay attention, you're going to miss it. You're going to completely miss it. So we need our hearts to be realigned to his heart. And the good news is that Jesus does that for us. Jesus shows up and he's saying, hey, let's realign our hearts. How do we do this? Let's take a look at a story of Jesus, Luke chapter 12. Do you ever notice when you're reading the Bible that Jesus often uses Sabbath to get people's attention? One of his favorite days to do miracle work is on the Sabbath, right? And I think the reason for that is this. Jesus wants to show up to people who should be paying attention, and they tend to miss him. But the people that don't miss him are the ones who are paying attention, right? So he shows up on Sabbath when the religious leaders and his people are supposed to be paying attention, and he shows them who he is, and they miss it. But the people who aren't, they're all busted and broken up, but they're paying attention because they need God to move. They get it. They get it. And so Sabbath is that gift where God says, hey, this is a gift to you so you can be paying attention to what I'm doing and what I'm up to. Here's one of the things that Jesus is telling, and we need to learn this. We need to hear what he's saying. We need to hear his heart so it can realign our hearts. He starts in verse 6 of chapter 12. He says, are not five sparrows sold for 2 pennies? Let me stop for just a moment because like jumping in, I read that, I'm like, that's strange. Number one, why are people buying sparrows, right? What's the point of buying a sparrow? I see them all the time. They come in. If you're out picnicking, they're going to fly in. They're going to eat whatever you dropped on the ground, right? If it's a marshmallow, they're probably going to die, okay? So there was a market for sparrows in the ancient time. How much did you spend on a sparrow in ancient time? 2 pennies. Now, it's not 2 pennies like you and I think of. That's about a day's wage in ancient times. So people are spending about a day's wage on sparrows. To me, seems like a waste of money, right? To them, maybe it was a waste of money. I still don't, what, did they like have a cage? These are my sparrows. Paid a whole day's wage for this. Don't know. But you can buy 5 sparrows for 2 pennies. But here's the point. He goes on, verse 6. Not one of them is forgotten before God. Not one of them. They're not terribly expensive, but they're terribly valuable. Not one of them is forgotten before God. And then he goes on. Why, even the hairs of your head are all numbered. Jesus is drawing us in, isn't he? And if we're paying attention, we're going to hear something profound here. fear not, you are of more value than many sparrows. The hairs of your head are all numbered. Here's what Jesus is saying. You have great value, and God is paying attention. Do you know the type of care and concern it takes to count the hairs on your head? Pastor Justin was in here earlier, and I said this then. I'll say it again. Like, for some of us, it's a little less time than for others, right? But it still takes time. It takes time. And Jesus is saying, the Lord is paying attention. You are of great value. What you're going through matters. What you're going through matters. Now, here's the context of what Jesus is using this dialogue about sparrows and value. He's saying, are you ashamed to pay attention to me? Are you ashamed to acknowledge me before men? He said, don't be afraid of that. I get it. You might be afraid, but here's the deal. God is paying attention. He's aware of what you're going through. Don't be afraid. And then he goes on in verse 8, I tell you, everyone who acknowledges me before men, the Son of Man also will acknowledge before the angels of God. You are of great value. God is paying attention, and he invites you to pay attention to him. He invites you to pay attention to him before men. Acknowledge him. Be aware of what he's doing. Confess, that's Jesus on the move. He went to the tomb, yes, but he came out of the tomb. And now he's at work in the hearts and lives of people. And if we're not paying attention, we're going to miss it. And so Sabbath is that invitation. Pay attention. Pay attention. The Sabbath heart allows us to stop our work to pay attention to Jesus' work, his resurrection work, what he's doing out there. And so if we will have Sabbath hearts, if we'll, by faith, allow Jesus to change us, here's what it can look like. I know this isn't exhaustive, but I've got four things that will change in how we pay attention. And this is a very practical way that we can roll this out. I want to take a look, in order to roll this out, at Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. It says, therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children. So we got that pattern, that picture in Exodus. When it talks about Sabbath, it then says, here's God's pattern for Sabbath. And now it's saying, be imitators of God's pattern. Be imitators of God as beloved children. Here's what it says, verse 2. And walk in love as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us, a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. Jump down to verse 15. Look carefully, right? Pay attention how you walk. Not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time because the days are evil. So consecrating the Sabbath is setting apart time, making the best use of time, stewarding time to reflect, to remember, to pay attention to how we're living. Are we imitating God in our lives as his beloved children? Here are some ways we can do that. Number one, we pay attention to God. We pay attention to what God is up to what God is doing. What is he doing around us? Where does his providence lead us? Have you ever stopped to consider for just a moment that the interruptions of your day might just be God's invitation for you to consecrate some time to pay attention to what he's doing? I have at least four interruptions in my life on a daily, weekly basis. I call them Ashton, Kai, Rain, and Bracken, right? They're constantly breaking into what I'm trying to do, and they're constantly, like, just interrupting, right? They are little interruptions. But what if, and I had the privilege of realizing this week because I'm studying this passage during the week, what if instead of I saw them as interruptions, I saw them as opportunities to imitate my Father? And as a father who loves his children, I get to imitate our Father who loves his children. And he gave me these little opportunities, right? One of the opportunities that he kind of reminded me of is, I'll share it by saying this. Yesterday, my wife went over to a shower. She went to ballet, then she went to a shower for baby Deacon, who was adopted. Has it been a month? All right, I was like a number of weeks ago in the 9 o'clock, but it's been about a month. and they had a baby shower for him. We didn't realize how quickly it would come, but he's a month old now, and my wife went to participate in that, and she got to hold the baby, and I found it very fascinating that a lot of the pictures of the shower are my wife holding a little infant, right? She loves them babies. She came home, and she mentioned how after holding baby Deacon, she realized how our 2.5-year-old is more like a grown man than he is like a baby, right? Much more like that than like the infant baby that we thought he was. And so what we realize is like that time, it goes by really quickly. It goes by really quickly. And so when Bracken came up to me a couple times yesterday and a couple times through this week, and he held up his train, his Thomas train, and he said, "Daddy, Twain, play." I got on my knees, I got on that train table, and I played with him. Right? And I just enjoyed the time that we had together. And I thought I enjoyed it enough. So when I wanted to be about my business, I like started to get up and he picked up the train and he threw it at me. Right? So I knew that wasn't enough time. We've got to spend more time together. So I got back down and I played with the twain. And I had a blast doing it. And it was great because I got to realize like he just wanted to spend time with me. He wanted me to spend time with him doing what he loves to do. And a lot of times, God is saying, hey, pay attention. I want to do what you love to do. I want to meet with you there. I want to commune with you. I want to show you things that you weren't aware are actually maybe even more enjoyable in that thing than if you did it alone. So we got to pay attention to God. What's he up to? What is he doing? How is he showing himself to us? But we'll miss it if we're not paying attention to him. Secondly, we need to pay attention to God's people, right? Love God, love people, particularly God's people. Here's something that we're learning. We've been, Pastor Justin and I have been meeting with different groups of people. We've been meeting with people that are 55 and older, just asking them about their experiences and what it's like in the church, what it's like particularly at Missio, and what we can learn. We're learning an amazing amount of information about the diversity of Christ's body and how people connect to Jesus and how they can grow and love and serve. And so we're really excited that we're learning all these things. So I appreciate the grace with which a lot of our folks have been meeting us. This past week, we met with a small group of single women. And they came, they wanted to just be heard. The single women and the leadership of the church, we have a very similar frustration. Our frustration is with some of the men, right? We want to reach the men. We want to like raise the bar for the men. And our heartbeat has been like, if we can win the men, we can win some families. If we can win some families, we can win some communities and some neighborhoods, and we can win the city. We go after the men. We're frustrated that men won't grow up, and so we're going after the men. And the single ladies are saying, we're with you. We're frustrated. What's our part in that? What we realize is like, we don't have a heart that says you're discounted, you're not a part of this, but we're not saying anything. And so what the women are doing is they're watching and they're saying, I think I have a part to play in this, but I'm not really sure what it is because they're not saying it. And if you can make up a narrative that says, well, then you don't have value, you're not a part of this. That's not what we're saying. So we're realizing we need to say some things differently. We need to do some things differently. And so here's one thing that we're doing. Here's one thing that we've been praying about. This has been a number of months that we've been talking about. How do we demonstrate that women can lead and teach and do that in a way that's a blessing to our people? So Pastor Justin and I, we sat down, we made a list of people, some men, some women, mostly women. And we said, we think you have some gifts. We'd like you to exercise your gifts. Here's a way we think you can do this. And it's not just, hey, there are children over here that need your time and attention and gifts. It's actually, there are hundreds of people that meet in here that need your time and attention and gifts. And so we've invited a group of women. You'll start to see them. They're going to come up here. They're going to use their gifts to bless you by leading us through body life. And so they need to be able to engage the crowd. They have gifts to do that. You need to see that. You need to see that that's one of the parts that they can play in teaching you, welcoming you, encouraging you, passing the peace, walking us through communion, showing us what the elements of Christ's body and blood mean. It's a small step. It's only one step, but it's a small step. We would have never gotten here if we weren't listening to our people. If we just keep beating the drum of, nope, this is what we're doing. We've got it. We've figured it out, and we're rolling on with it. So we need to pay attention to God's people, right? And we could fight back with this, because here's the thing. We have over 50% men in our congregation. Do you know that's unheard of in the church? Most churches are full of women and children. And that's not a bad thing, but it's a bad thing if the men won't come. And so I praise God that we've got them, but well, here's what we need to do. We need to say, and here's your role in helping build up the kingdom of heaven. Here's your role in helping build up the kingdom of heaven. And not just go after the men, but we have to pay attention to the church if we're going to do that. Thirdly, we need to pay attention to ourselves. We need to pay attention to ourselves. And here's what Sabbath invites us into. It's essentially a management of our energy. You recognize, I mean, most of us are still relatively young, but you realize you only have so much energy. You really only can do so much. And Sabbath is an invitation to manage that energy, right? And so here's what it looks like. If we're called to live a life that is more like a marathon, we better be careful that we don't go sprinting out of the gates, right? Because you're going to run out of your energy very quickly. You need to learn how to manage that. Life is a race, but it's more of a marathon type run than a sprint. At least that's what we're hoping for. We don't want our lives to just be a sprint. And so we all took off running. Eventually, we're going to slow down. We're going to stop at some point because we just don't have enough energy. So here's what we need to do. We need to take a moment to pay attention to ourselves and ask the question, how much energy do I have left? And what do I need to build up that energy? Some of us, we need to build up that energy by way of being around people. Some of us need to build up that energy by being away from people, right? Some of you are introverts. I get it. It doesn't mean that you don't love people. It just means that after you've spent time with people, you need to get away to manage your energy to get your batteries recharged, right? Some of you are introverts and you're the life of the party. That's not me, right? I'm an extrovert, but I don't have to be the life of the party or the center of attention, says the man whose microphone's standing in the only one talking in the room. But I legitimately don't. Like, if we're in a social setting, I think you'll find I don't have to be the life of the party. I just need to be there because I get my energy from the people around me. But some of you get energy by spending time alone, and you need to manage that energy. You need to evaluate, how am I doing in my work scenario? Do I get enough time for me to just kind of recharge? And if you don't, you need to get that, right? You need to get that time alone, and you need to share with the people around you to give you that space. Some of us need that. We need to manage our energy. Me, I don't. I used to work a job where I was working with a painting contractor, and he would paint these big, enormous homes, and I would spend 8 hours a day taking putty and filling nail holes that the carpenters left, prepping a room to be painted. I would do it all by myself with no one to talk to, no one around, and I would come home at the end of the day depressed because I wasn't around people. Like I said, I didn't have to be talking. I just need people around me. People give me energy. Some of you are like that. Some of you need to recognize when you're down, you need to evaluate, where's my energy level? Do I need to be around people to get it charged up, or do I need to be away from people to get it charged up, right? And most of us are somewhat of a mix of the two, but you need to pay attention to yourself and set up some rhythms in your life, some Sabbath rhythms where you get that time. I'm so extra. I'm begging the children, who wants to run to the store with me, right? Because at the store there are other people, and I am not going by myself, right? I need somebody to go with me, right? I need those times, and my wife very graciously gives me those times. Finally, we need to pay attention to one another, not just in the church, but outside of the church. I think one of the problems that we experience a lot in the church today, one of the reasons we're not able to connect with culture, is because we're giving answers to questions people aren't asking. And the reason we're giving answers to questions that people aren't asking is we're not doing a great job at listening to their questions. We're not paying attention to what people's hurts and hopes and heartaches and trials and triumphs. We're not listening to what they are. And so we're coming up with answers, and it's not doing anything. And so we've got to pay attention to what's going on around us, or else we're going to miss out on opportunities. Here's the way I've seen this illustrated in the past week. My friend Josh, he pastors a church called New City. It's up in Oakley. Great pastor. Love that brother to death. It's a PCA church. If you're like of the PCA ilk, go hang out with them. You will be extremely blessed. They are opening a new building this morning. They just purchased it. They've been renovating it for like 8-9 months, spending lots of money to renovate this old church building. The church building is actually in Norwood, but in its heyday, they had their 50th anniversary in 1937. Old church, old building, cool space. I got some building envy when I was there, definitely. I'll be going back there this evening to their open house. They're opening it up to the community to show them the restoration of the building. But their 50-year anniversary in 1937, the church building in Norwood, which seats about 350 or so people, they boasted an attendance, a Sunday congregation, of over 900 people. They planted churches, one in the east, one in the west. The one in the east had about 400 people attending in 1937. The one in the west had about 200 people attending in 1937. Today, east and west campuses do not exist. The main campus in Norwood dwindled down to 20 people, and they had to sell their building. Now, part of the reason for that is they stopped answering the questions with the message of Jesus that the culture was asking. They actually said the same thing, but what they did was they changed the message. Like, they didn't look any different in 2014 than they did in 1937 in terms of, like, minimal outside things, things that where you don't have to pay attention, you just go through the motions. And as they kind of listened, they got a little afraid, and as people were asking questions about sexual liberty and things, rather than change the mission and help them address those things, they changed the message. And they stopped saying, yeah, they started saying things like, yeah, God doesn't really care. Yeah, maybe Jesus isn't really God. Maybe you're not a sinner. Maybe you don't need to change. And so people stopped changing and stopped participating, and now they're gone. But if we won't listen to the concerns, to the questions, and then give faithful answers to those questions because we've been paying attention, we're not going to be here in 50 years. There won't be anything here for our kids. And so we've got to be a people that take Sabbath to pay attention, to listen to one another. So we pay attention to God. We pay attention to God's people. We pay attention to ourselves, and we pay attention to one another. I'm going to pray for you. Pastor Justin is going to come up here. Our band is going to come up here. They're going to lead us in the rest of our response time. Father God, open up our eyes to pay attention to you. Open our eyes and our hearts, our ears, to pay attention to your people, to ourselves, and to our neighbors, so that we can have deep, abiding, eternal joy for your glory. In the name of the Father, Son, and Spirit, amen.